You watch a movie like Home Alone, right? Classic Christmas comedy. Everyone knows it.
Yeah, Kevin McAllister, the traps, it's iconic.
Totally. But it's easy to just laugh it off. Then I stumbled across this, well, this account, supposedly the real story behind it, and it's pretty unsettling.
Oh.
So the story goes, this was back in 1989 in Chicago. A family, big rush to the airport, Christmas trip, you know the drill.
Total chaos, I can imagine.
Exactly. And in all that chaos, they accidentally leave their 8-year-old son, Michael, behind. At home, alone.
Wow. Okay, that's the core premise, but yeah, keep going.
So Michael wakes up, probably confused at first, maybe thinks they just popped out for something quick.
Right, assumes it's a simple mistake.
But hours go by, it starts getting dark, the house is just silent, really quiet. He tries calling, trying to reach his family. No luck.
That feeling of isolation must have been intense.
And then it gets much, much darker. He looks outside, sees these two men just watching the
Okay,
house.
so not the bumbling wet bandits type.
Apparently not. More. Well, the description sounds pretty ominous. And then one of them actually breaks in.
Oh man, an 8-year-old, what does he do?
He's terrified, obviously, but he remembers his dad's shotgun. He grabs it.
Whoa, okay.
The intruder comes into the kitchen, and Michael, he shoots him.
He actually shot him, an 8-year-old.
That's the story. The guy screams, apparently gets out injured, but the other man, he doesn't leave.
So one's wounded and gone, but the other is still there.
Still there, Michael is just petrified, runs and hides in the attic for hours, listening,
Listening to what?
hearing the second intruder searching the house. Can you imagine just listening to footsteps below, knowing someone who broke in is looking for you?
That's pure terror, not comedic at all.
Not even remotely. The police don't arrive until the next morning. They find the broken door, signs of the struggle, blood.
And the second guy.
Gone. Vanished. Never found, according to this account. And here's the part that really sticks with you. Apparently, Michael's family said he never, ever spoke about what happened that night. Not a word.
Complete silence. Wow.
Wow. And then, years later, he supposedly watched Home Alone by himself. The story says he was laughing, but his eyes never left the window the whole time.
That's a chilling image.
Yeah.
But okay, let's pause for a second. The timing, right? 1989 for this alleged incident, and Home Alone comes out in 1990.
Yeah, it's quick.
It seems incredibly fast, almost unbelievable. For something that traumatic, if it happened, to become the basis for a family comedy film released just a year later.
That's a fair point.
Plus, I mean, let's be real. The source we looked at about narrative analysis explicitly states Home Alone is fictional, which obviously it is.
Right. It's a movie. And maybe this Michael story is just, I don't know, an urban legend that sort of attached itself to the film because of the similar setup. The line feels pretty blurry.
Exactly. Doesn't mean we can't explore the idea, but we should probably acknowledge it's likely not the direct inspiration in that literal sense.
Agreed. But even if it's just a what-if story, comparing this Michael scenario to Kevin McAllister, I mean, the difference is huge.
Night and day.
You've got Michael, this terrified kid, making a split-second, potentially lethal decision with a real gun out of sheer terror.
Versus Kevin, who, yeah, he's scared sometimes, but it's mostly played for laughs. His traps are elaborate pranks, Rube Goldberg devices meant to cause slapstick injury, not, well, not that.
Right. Paint cans and icy steps versus a shotgun blast. The whole emotional core is different. Kevin's fear is temporary, almost part of the adventure. Michael's sounds like profound trauma.
Absolutely. Kevin always has this underlying safety net. You feel like it'll work out. This Michael story is just drenched in real danger, real consequences.
It really makes you think about how we process things, doesn't it? How real events, maybe even deeply distressing ones, can get filtered and reshaped into entertainment.
Yeah, this whole process of like cultural myth making, taking something potentially raw and traumatic and turning it into a story we can handle, maybe even laugh at.
Is it a coping mechanism? Like, society exploring dark possibilities but keeping them at arm's length through fiction?
Could be. Comedy especially is powerful that way. It can deflate fear, make chaos seem manageable, at least on screen.
But what gets lost in translation? When you sand off the rough edges, the real horror, for a laugh track?
That's the question, isn't it? And
Yeah.
thinking about Michael again, the legal side is just mind-boggling.
Totally. If it were real, an 8-year-old using a shotgun against an intruder? Self-defense.
Oh, legally, that's incredibly complex. You'd have laws about self-defense, castle doctrine maybe, but then factor in the shooter being a minor.
The perceived threat, the reasonableness of the force. Could an 8-year-old even form that intent?
Exactly. It depends so much on jurisdiction, the specific facts. Was there a duty to retreat, even in his own home? His age, his maturity? It'd all be under a massive microscope. It opens up a huge debate.
And beyond the law, just the psychological impact, experiencing that fear, taking that action, even if justified.
That leaves a mark, a deep one.
The family saying he never spoke of it, that sounds like trauma.
Yeah.
Classic symptom, right? Bottling it up.
Definitely. Could be PTSD, immense guilt, even survivor's guilt, perhaps.
Mm.
Feeling responsible, even though he was the victim in the situation.
Yeah, the weight of that, especially so young, it could shape your whole life. And then to have this, like, funhouse mirror version of your trauma become a beloved Christmas movie.
The juxtaposition is jarring, to say the least.
Yeah.
Whether the connection is real or just perceived.
It also makes you look at the media or maybe just storytelling in general, how these narratives get shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the Michael story is true or not, the fact that it exists and gets shared shows we have this appetite for the real story, the darker thing behind the curtain.
Right. We seem drawn to finding the grit or the grim reality under the glossy surface, don't we?
And maybe the retelling, the sharing, even the fictionalizing.
Yeah.
Maybe that changes the story over time, sensationalizes it, smooths it out, turns it into something else entirely.
It definitely can. Media, even just word of mouth, can amplify things, blur lines between fact and folklore, and create these modern myths, like this one, potentially.
So you end up with this tangled relationship between, you know, possible real trauma, how we remember and retell it, and how it morphs into entertainment.
It's complex. No easy answers.
Mm-hmm.
The journey from a dark night in the Chicago house to Kevin McAllister sitting paint can traps, whether it's a direct line or just a thematic echo.
It just leaves you with more questions, really. Definitely something to chew on long after the credits roll.